Welcome to this podcast from Control Risk, the global specialist risk consultancy. I'm Barnaby Fletcher, and this is the second in our regular series of podcasts exploring the impact of COVID-19 on sub-Saharan Africa. As we record this on 20th of April, there have been 12,723 cases across sub-Saharan Africa, with South Africa, Ghana, and Cameroon all recording more than 1,000 cases. After initially tracking the progress of Europe and the Americas, the curve of new cases in sub-Saharan Africa has dramatically slowed, particularly in the worst-hit South Africa. And this allows some very cautious optimism that the swift actions by governments across the region have been successful in mitigating the worst of the pandemic. But it is far too early to say that with any confidence, and governments themselves are warning against premature celebrations. And, of course, the measures introduced by governments to slow the spread of COVID-19 come with their own costs. Today, we are joined by Jacques Nel, the head of macro services at NKC African Economics, the Africa-focused subsidiary of our economics partners, Oxford Economics. Jacques and his team have been doing a lot of work to understand the economic challenges caused by COVID-19 in Africa and how governments and investors are trying to overcome these. Jacques, you are currently under lockdown yourself in South Africa, and you have been doing research on the impacts of such measures. What are the factors that you have been looking at in assessing these impacts, and what are some of the interesting findings?
A lot of African countries implemented lockdown periods of 2 to 3 weeks, which international experience has shown us is not going to be effective enough. We expect most of them to be extended. We wanted to look at what would the economic cost be for the extension of these lockdowns. So to assess the impact, we look at the economic structure as well as the state of the economy leading into these lockdowns. And just when looking at the economic structure, we take into account factors like the importance of tourism, and then also look at the proportion of GDP attributed to agriculture versus services or industry. Because, of course, the agriculture sector is going to be less affected by a lockdown because food production is considered essential good. Businesses in the agricultural sector are going to be less affected than services or manufacturing or other industrial sectors. So then just when we looked at the state of the economy, we looked at the scope for monetary and fiscal stimulus, because of course this is going to reduce the impact of the lockdown. Our estimates suggest that a two-week lockdown extension results in an average 3 percentage point reduction in annual consumer spending that year. And this figure then increases to just under 9 percentage points if the lockdown is extended by 5 weeks. Now, of course, the impact's going to vary. Countries with services and industry-based economies, such as those in Southern Africa and some North African countries, are going to be harder hit by a lockdown, while countries such as those in East Africa, where agriculture still plays an important role in generating livelihoods, and where retail isn't as formalized yet, we're going to see a bit less of a economic impact.
Could you give us some idea of how the virus is affecting the continent's largest economies, so South Africa, Nigeria, etc.?
Yes, for the South African lockdown, most mining and manufacturing production has been completely put to a halt due to the lockdown restrictions imposed on the economy. And South Africa also has Africa's most formalized retail sector. So, you know, forcing people to stay at home and just opening essential services such as groceries, the economy is going to take a disproportionately large hit relative to other African countries where retail isn't as formalized. And then just staying with South Africa, from an exports perspective, a lot of South Africa's exports are manufactured or mining goods. So, of course, if these industries are closed, essentially, then we're not going to be able to produce the goods to export. And even if we could, you know, there's the slump in external demand, especially for transport equipment, which constitutes a large proportion of South Africa's exports. You know, that demand's not going to be there. So a lockdown is going to have a big impact on consumer spending domestically, but just the virus in general is going to have a big impact on the demand for South African exports. So that's going to stay with us for a while. So then just moving quickly on to Nigeria, there we also expect quite a big slump this year, around 4% GDP contraction this year. They've taken more of a regional perspective to lockdowns. Some states, including the commercial capital Lagos, have entered a two-week lockdown in March, and this has also been extended by another 2 weeks. This, of course, will have the effect on demand, you know, reducing demand and reducing consumption. But, of course, in Nigeria, it's always an oil story. It's no secret how dependent the economy is on its oil sector for both fiscal revenue and export receipts. At current levels of around $30 per barrel, a lot of domestic Nigerian producers aren't profitable. So we could actually see a reduction in oil production there. Of course, you know, that's going to have a massive impact on the economy. And just finally, looking at Egypt, their government has been very proactive in its policy response. On the monetary side, the central bank implemented an aggressive 300 basis point cut to its policy rate. And the government has also announced a 100 billion Egyptian pound fiscal stimulus plan. These should reduce the impact, but we should also consider, you know, in Egypt, they've also implemented their own social distancing measures with a night curfew and a stay-at-home order. That's going to have a negative impact on consumer spending. And in Egypt, it's also an external story there. Some of its biggest trade partners, including China and Italy, have their own, you know, economic struggles going on. And just a general reduction in trade is going to hit Egypt through its Suez Canal receipts. And of course, the tourism sector, where tourism accounted for around 10% of the Egyptian economy in 2019. So given the knock that tourism is going to take this year, it's going to weigh heavily on the economy this year.
In Africa, are there any countries you could point to that you think could prove more economically resilient and actually not avoid the impact altogether, but come out looking slightly stronger than their peers?
It's going to be hard to find growth on the continent, or it's, in fact, anywhere on the world this year. But we do think countries like Rwanda and to a lesser extent, Kenya and Ethiopia, and then in West Africa, countries like Cote d'Ivoire, we might see some growth there. And some of them might surprise to the upside. And what these countries have in common is they all have pretty robust agricultural sectors, and their growth models also centered around domestic consumption. So if they are able to contain the virus and get their domestic economies going or getting some semblance of normality, then that would continue. And these economies, they were going to be some of the strongest growing economies coming into 2020, and they could still be if they are able to contain the virus.
One of the points you mentioned there is the fiscal and monetary responses from governments, and you spoke a bit about Egypt and what they're doing. In the developed world, we've seen unprecedented monetary and in some cases fiscal stimulus being introduced. In a lot of sub-Saharan Africa, especially, a lot of countries are struggling with debt, which has risen in recent years. What are African governments doing? But what can they do given the limited fiscal headroom that many of them have?
On the monetary side, we've seen some aggressive conventional monetary stimulus, most notably in countries like Egypt, South Africa, Ghana, and Kenya, and also some unconventional monetary stimulus in countries like also South Africa, Kenya, but also Uganda and Nigeria, where the central banks have encouraged debt restructuring and credit relief to consumers and small businesses. Now, we still have to see to what extent that's going to work. But a problem that a lot of these countries, and in fact, most African countries have, is that they have a weak monetary transmission mechanism, meaning, whatever the central bank does, it does help. But most of the time, it only helps some of the more medium or large enterprises and not so much, consumers that are generally tend to be underbanked or small businesses. So it's going to be important if these countries can provide some fiscal stimulus. Just looking at debt levels, pre-crisis fiscal budget balances, financial sector developments, just as a gauge to see to what extent these governments can finance deficits domestically, and taking into account foreign currency reserves, it only looks like a few countries will be able to increase spending in a sustainable basis. These include countries like South Africa, Mauritius, and Morocco. And then also to a lesser extent, Botswana and Egypt. So they'll be able to increase spending in a sustainable way this year. But most African countries don't have much fiscal space to increase spending without the help of foreign aid or loans from multilateral organizations. Luckily, we've seen some good news in this regard, with the IMF and World Bank last Friday, in fact, announcing that up to $80 billion in loans could be mobilized for Africa this year. And that would be $57 billion from institutional lenders and governments, and then a further $13 billion from the private sector. They also estimate that Africa will still need a further $44 billion US dollars to cover the necessary increase in spending. That's beyond the funds that they are making available at the moment.
One of the great unknowns in terms of judging what the economic impact will be and how much stimulus governments will have to provide is simply the scale of the pandemic. As we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, there are some very tentative grounds for cautious optimism in that the increase in new cases, especially in South Africa, has slowed significantly. It is too early with far too many unknowns to place much weight on that. But if this does continue, if the spread of COVID-19 is substantially limited, at least in some countries, some of those that you mentioned, is this likely to make a huge difference from an economic perspective? Or is it actually the global fallout and the restrictions on trade and the commodity prices that is really going to cause the most significant economic challenges?
I think it's important to look at, what was going on economically on the continent in the lead up to 2020. And there we saw a lot of these East African, some of them smaller, but growing really fast economies, and also some in West Africa, like Cote d'Ivoire. A lot of these economies are a lot less dependent on external developments than a lot of the commodity dependent economies. So as I mentioned before, a lot of these growth structures growth in these countries was driven by rising consumption and the expansion of services to until now, largely underserviced populations. So if these countries are able to contain the virus domestically, then that could start getting going again. Their financial services and their telecom sectors could jump on the trend that they were on, the strong growth trajectory, rise in consumption with increasing formalized retail sectors. All that could take a knock, but those fundamentals could get back into place and these countries could jump back onto their strong growth trajectories. We saw in the commodity price slump in 2014 that a lot of these East African countries like Kenya, Rwanda, Ethiopia, Tanzania, and also Cote d'Ivoire in the West, they continued to record strong growth during that period just because they aren't as dependent on their commodity prices or exports in that matter. And for that reason, they're not, to a certain extent, contained or isolated from developments externally. Not completely isolated, of course, but just less dependent on a strong global GDP growth than a lot of other African countries. So there we could see some strong growth this year.
It's still maybe too soon to talk about a post-COVID world. But if you were an investor looking to both support and take advantage of the economic recovery in some of these countries you mentioned, which sectors or countries would you be keeping an eye on?
Again, that's difficult because, as you say, we don't know what a post-COVID world is going to look like or when this world is actually going to arrive, for that matter. But I do think one of the things that we did or that we are seeing is that, due to the lockdown measures being adopted, and social distancing, a lot of economic transactions and just actual social life is moving to the virtual space. Now, East Africa has already been the leader, not just on the continent, but also to a great extent globally in mobile services. It's M-Pesa is, one of the most progressive mobile money services out there. So I would think that, this could have been an additional boost and maybe encouraged. Kenya has been the leading figure in this regard. Maybe in East Africa, we're going to see expansion of that, where this mobile services is going to see mobile banking and beyond mobile banking, even a lot of telecom services expanding from there, which could be a pretty exciting space to look at the moment, especially, in a post-COVID world. And I think another interesting thing to keep an eye on is, are we going to see an increased impetus for some privatization? How are these governments going to try to diversify their economies away from the commodities? And, depending on what these governments do, we could see some pretty exciting sectors open up or expand for, private investors.
Jacques, thank you very much for your time and expertise. Any of our listeners who would like to find out more about the research and services NKC African Economics provides, via Control Risk would be happy to put you in touch, or you can go to africaneconomics.com. In the next couple of episodes, we'll be talking with our compliance specialist to find out about how COVID-19 is throwing up new issues that investors must consider as part of their due diligence processes, and our crisis and security experts about how to deal with some of the security concerns that the crisis is raising. Please do visit controlrisk.com/COVID-19 to read more of our analysis and find out how we are helping our clients navigate this crisis. And please do reach out. Until then, I'm Barnaby Fletcher, and thank you for listening to this podcast from Control Risks.